Have you heard of Olivia, the travel company for lesbians and LGBTQ plus women? You know what they say, wherever you go, there you are. And when you're a lesbian or LGBTQ plus woman, you want to go on vacation, let your hair down, and be your unique self. Olivia Travel creates full takeovers of their cruise, resort, riverboat, and adventure vacations, so you'll spend the week with LGBTQ plus women who come from all different backgrounds yet have so much in common. It's life-changing to be in the majority on your vacation. You don't know until you go. Discover Olivia for yourself at olivia.com or through the link in our show notes. Save $100 on your next Olivia booking with promo code CRUISING.
I'm 1,000 years old. I'm almost 40. So that's something I think that initially, like, we bonded over was just being of a certain age, women of a certain age.
Yeah. Yep. I can confirm.
The same. Yeah.
These two voices are Mara and Emily.
My name is Mara Herb-Kurzman, she, her. I'm the chef and co-owner at the Ruby Fruit.
My name is Emily Billigas. I'm the co-owner and also the wine director.
We're sitting at the corner table of LA's newest lesbian wine bar, in the very space where Mara and Emily first met, long before it was called the Ruby Fruit.
We met actually here at the restaurant that was here before. I was the general manager, and Emily was a server and bartender, and we're a similar age, and I think have like similar taste in like music and also, you know, kind of 2000s, 90s culture, et cetera.
Yeah, I feel like we just sort of saw something special in each other.
Well, one night we both were wearing leopard print shirts.
Which I actually remember that.
I have a picture of it. We both had these like oversized like leopard print shirts on, and I was like, I like her.
Yeah, I remember that. Oh, yeah.
What they didn't yet know was that in addition to having the same leopard print shirts, they also shared the same dream.
I had always wanted to open a lesbian bar, and my friends and I in New York would talk about doing that a lot.
This was always kind of this, like, you know, strange dream in my head because I've been living in LA for a really long time, and there weren't any lesbian bars that I knew of, and I, like, never was able – I just never knew where to, like, go to meet girls.
And then – one day at work,
Mara approached me in the kitchen in the back, just truly like in the middle of service. I think we were like eating family meal with our hands and just like having a second. And Mara was like, do you want to open a lesbian bar with me? And I was like, yeah. Or I think I said, can we have a pool table? And she was like, yes. And I was like, all right, great. I'm in.
I had just had a falling out with a business partner that I was working with. And it was very much related to being a woman working with a man and lack of respect. And I was really frustrated. And I was like, how can I get as far away from this as humanly possible? As I mentioned, I'd always thought about, you know, lesbian spaces. And I was like, there's no lesbian bar in LA. I want to make a place that's a queer space, a lesbian space that, like, I can work with just women all the time, and I don't have this problem of working with cis men. How can we do this all the time and have a place to go all the time? And that's how that started.
That was in the spring of 2022. The conversation with Emily happened later that summer.
And that's kind of it.
That's truly, yeah, that's how it started. It started like that, like standing over the trash can in the back of the kitchen, yeah, eating in the middle of a shift and like a daydream, and then now we're here.
This is Cruising, a podcast about the last lesbian bars in the U.S. My name is Sarah Gabrielli, and this season we're taking you to lesbian bars past and present. This is the Ruby Fruit.
I lived in New York City. I lived in Brooklyn. There's no scene like LA.
This is Denise Jones, a Ruby Fruit regular we met up with at the bar.
People here are festive and excited to be around each other. They are active and happy and smiling. I mean, the folks here just really enjoy each other and going out.
Denise has a lot to say about the superiority of the lesbian nightlife scene in LA. But of all people, she has a very educated perspective.
I've been through a lot of scenes, through a lot of cities. North Carolina, D.C., New York, here. Background also on me is that I've been alive a long time, and through that entire time of my conscious memory, I've been queer.
By this logic, Denise has been on the queer scene since the early 80s.
I am very old. I was born in the year 1980 in Florida, but my dad was in the Air Force, so within months we had moved to Greece. One of my first memories is this little girl that I was just enamored with. We're on the beach, I don't know, wandering around. I don't know. I'm sure there's parents, but it's just me and her, you know, and I'm picking her flowers to demonstrate my affection for her. So super gay from the beginning, and never got not gay. No, just got quiet about, because I, you know, I, probably up till I'm 6 or 7, I'm like, yeah, this girl, that girl, blah, blah, and people are like, what the, you can't, blah, blah, blah. In fact, it had to be socialized out of me. So I had to socialize, quiet. If I'm 43 years old, I have been actively queer for 41 and a half years. Like actively in the dating scene, courting women since I was 1 and a half, you know, since I could waddle around.
At around 7 years old and now living in Mississippi, Denise still hadn't learned to be quiet about her queerness.
There's this girl I was in love with, and she rolled my bus. And I remember one day she hadn't come into school, which gave us time to talk about her. I remember the little boys on the bus being like, I'm in love with JM. And I'm just like, all right, let me just cut in here. No, I'm in love with JM. And remember, we're in Mississippi. So these boys turn around, they look at me and they're like, you can't marry JM. And I'm like, well, why can't I marry JM? And they're like, because you're black. You can't marry JM because you're black. Black people and white people can't get married. So they completely skipped over me being gay. That was just like, they can't even deal with that right now. We got to get to the thing at hand.
It was an extremely close-minded environment.
There was a lot of judgment. I remember moving from Mississippi, and I was telling everyone, oh, we're moving to Japan. And they're like, oh, well, how do you feel about that? All those people are going to hell. And I'm like, all the people of Japan are going to hell? They're like, well, yeah, because they're not Christian. They're going to hell. I'm like, a whole country of people is going to hell. And then I moved to Japan. And like, Japan is one of the most engaging cultures and stimulating places to be, with like a politeness and a sense of honor that I hadn't seen before. And so if all of those people were going to hell, and all the folks in Mississippi are going to heaven, I knew where I wanted to be, and that's not heaven.
Moving around with the Air Force was kind of a blessing for Denise, because she was very much able to escape that small town mindset.
Seeing different perspectives in the world and how deeply each place believed their thing made me realize that no one thing was necessarily correct, you know? Everyone was so sure of their culture in Mississippi, in the same way that everyone was so sure of their culture in Japan. Seeing these like really strong reactions in people and knowing that they know that their thing is true, but it's not true for me. What you believe is true for you, but it's not true for me, is what I started learning moving all over the world.
Eventually, Denise ended up in New York, where she would live for many years before making the move to LA.
I feel like in New York, you have to build a wall because you're inundated with so many people all day long. You know, you've got to create a space and hold it. Like when I lived in New York, you go to a party and everybody is awesome and interesting, but too cool in some ways. No one wants to be vulnerable in the same way that people here. I came here to be vulnerable. So I left New York because I was too hard. I was too closed off. I was too like, I just had too much of a wall up, and I wanted to release a little bit.
Now, this episode is technically about Los Angeles, but the comparison to New York City certainly came up enough in conversation. Denise had an explanation for this.
there's a bridge from New York to LA, and it kind of goes one way. People from LA, and they move to New York, they go right back. I feel like I don't know as many LAers in New York, but this is like an open like floodgate from New York, pipeline from New York to here.
So what is it that makes New York so much more difficult to live in for some people? There's expenses, for one thing. Though both expensive cities, the overall cost of living is at least 20% lower in LA, which of course contributes to the work culture and the general vibe.
I always say this, like, New York feels like you're just struggling to keep your head above water.
Emily, one of the Ruby Fruit owners, has also participated in the New York to LA pipeline.
I was just treading water for like 15 years and trying to do a lot and not really ever able to do anything because there was just always so much that I was trying to do all at once. I had too many jobs all the time. I was always running around.
One of these things Emily had always wanted to do was open a lesbian bar.
I had a lot of friends there who were, you know, builders and makers, and I was like, this is going to be so fun. You know, you do the build out and you make our ceramic mugs and you DJ and you do the graphic design. But it never felt actually possible in New York to like actually make that happen. I think the barrier to entry was always just like rent is really high. And we were all so busy in New York all the time that felt more like a daydream than anything else.
By the time Denise made the move in 2019, she was very much over whatever had once appealed to her about living in New York.
There was no inciting incident but for the 2016 election. Okay, and I know that I moved here 3 years later from that, but like I worked in news, and the world started getting really dark and hard and mean after the 2016 election. And suddenly living in New York City did not feel as good as it did. You know, like I love the grittiness, the darkness of New York City, but when the entire world was dark, I needed light. So I literally moved to this sunny city, this place where people seek light, and I found it.
At least according to Denise, it was about more than just moving between the country's two biggest media hubs.
Why LA? There's something about how LA came to be. It's like the Wild West. People came here to be free and away from the like prying eye or the like congestion of the Northeast or the East Coast in general. You're drawn to the sun, the excitement, the freedom, I think, in some way. There's an openness here to the community. People are not as closed off.
At the very least, I had to assume that leaving New York would come with losing a certain amount of queer community. Sure, West Hollywood is known for its gay clubs and bars, but those cater to gay men. Before Ruby Fruit, the city hadn't had a lesbian bar since 2017, when a bar called the Oxwood Inn closed. Before that, West Hollywood's The Palms had been the most famous lesbian spot in town. It first opened in 1967 as a neighborhood joint and became a lesbian bar in the 1970s. The Palms closed its doors for good back in 2013. Here in New York, on the other hand, we now have 4 open and operating lesbian bars. And on more of a personal level, living in Brooklyn, it literally feels like I see queer women everywhere I turn.
I mean, I don't think it gets more gay than New York.
But after meeting both Denise and Emily, it was clear I don't exactly know what I'm talking about.
LA just felt more gay to me. I don't know.
I feel like LA is like secretly super gay. I think that LA knows it's super gay. I think LA knows it's like a housing for so much of the queer existence. Here's the thing is, there's a brick and mortar, which is like the historical idea, but the roving parties in LA are also a staple.
That's what Denise is referring to when she says there's no other scene like LA. The roving nightly pop-up parties.
We're in the clubs like the boys. Like we're out every night like the men's.
I knew that LA had a very thriving lesbian party scene, and I was like, damn, there are so many dykes in LA. Because these parties were always packed. And we don't have that kind of thing in New York.
I've never been to a place where I can't figure out where I'm going to go tonight because there's too many things going on. Oh, I missed that party because there were two other parties going on is not a problem I've ever had before.
There's something for everyone. There's speed dating events. There's lesbian goth night. There's a lot of burlesque sapphic shows.
This is Anna Goodman, a well-known queer party producer and promoter.
I mean, there are so many in LA, and not just like queer parties, but also like drag king shows. There's also like queer surfing club meetups. And then there's even a queer foraging meetup.
We first connected with Anna through Denise. Apparently, Anna is the person to talk to about lesbian and queer events in LA.
Anna Goodman has 100,000 parties that she throws, and they're all amazing.
I have 5 monthlies. So Open Dyke Night, Hidden Hearts, and Sapphic Sounds are my 3 that I do by myself. And then I have Hot Flash that I do with my partner, Sorel. And then another party called Girls, Gays, and Theys that I do with Ashley Belzo.
Back in 2022, Mara and Emily decided to try their luck in the thriving lesbian party scene. It was sort of the first iteration of what would eventually become the Ruby Fruit.
So we used to throw these parties at Azette, and we called them Lesette.
Azette is the name of the restaurant where they met and worked together.
We didn't quite realize, I don't think, how big it was going to be immediately. I was very surprised how quickly the internet kind of picked up the flyer and started proliferating it. And like, there was buzz about the party, and we'd never even thrown one before. And we were kind of random in terms of like the more established queer scene.
The first Lesette party was on October 3rd, 2022.
I remember because it was the night before we had to tear down the patio at Azette. There used to be this like parklet patio out front. It was the night before that. And so we like that night of the Lesette party, we like drew all over the wall and like,
that's right.
Yeah. There was this. Yeah. It was cute.
Yeah. It got rowdy.
It got rowdy.
Best way. And also I think that night we started to understand that this space, you'll notice that it's a very small space with very few places for seats, for butts in seats. And when we threw Lesette, we realized that this place was more of a wine bar and less of a restaurant. And we knew that we had to, if we were going to be successful here in this space, once we actually took it over, we knew we had to lean into that. It had to be like standing and milling around and
elbow
chatting
to elbow and like people everywhere.
I think Mar and I both knew like, oh, that would be fun if we could just do that every night. That was kind of the idea.
And that's exactly what happened.
In the beginning, staying in the Azette space didn't exactly seem like a viable option.
A couple of my friends were like, why don't you just take over the Azette lease? And I was like, well, because it's a functioning restaurant that still is in existence where I work. So that's not possible.
But then it became possible. Like very unexpectedly, that became very real.
Last year, the Azette owners decided to sell and approached Mara about taking over the space.
This started at the end of November, and yeah, by the end of December, we had kind of made a deal, and we opened the restaurant the second week of February.
It all happened on a very fast timeline.
The train of opening the restaurant was moving very, very quickly, and we did what a lot of people do in a matter of years. Like, we did it in like a month. And so we had to come up with something really quickly, and then Emily brought up the Ruby Fruit.
The name Ruby Fruit comes from an iconic lesbian coming-of-age book, Ruby Fruit Jungle, by Rita Mae Brown. And it wouldn't be the first time a lesbian bar took its name from the book. For example, there was a Ruby Fruit in New York until 2008 and a Ruby Fruit Jungle in New Orleans until 2012.
We knew that there were other bars named the Ruby Fruit in different iterations, but we still didn't think that we were taking something of them. This feels like part of the lexicon and something that everyone could share, and something that we were also looking for when we started this. And as we were talking about the concept and how to like kind of like bill this, is working in a way that was like very specific while also not excluding anyone intentionally, because you
can't do that. Mm-hmm. The Ruby Fruit Jungle is such an iconic lesbian book. We understood that this would speak to a very specific clientele, and hopefully without saying who this isn't for, it would be very clear who it was for. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And it's kind of like, if you know, you know.
Have you heard of Olivia, the travel company for lesbians and LGBTQ plus women? You know what they say. Those who wish to sing always find a song. And when you're a lesbian or LGBTQ plus woman, you want to be able to go on vacation, have some laughs, and be your unique self. Olivia Travel creates full takeovers of their cruise, resort, riverboat, and adventure vacations. And they program every trip with comedians and musicians from our community. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll have the time of your life. Discover Olivia for yourself at olivia.com or through the link in our show notes and save $100 on your next Olivia booking when you use promo code CRUISING. So Mara and Emily's The Ruby Fruit opened in February of 2023. The reception blew them away. There were lines down the block, and a New York Times article telling their story came out that April.
I mean, I always say, I'm like, oh, my coming out was like, I had to do it big. I had to like do it in the New York Times. Like, I couldn't just like quietly come out to my family. I had to like do it, you know, in a big way.
The article ended up meaning a lot more to Mara than business success.
Honestly, like this whole process has been like my coming out. A huge kind of problem in my life has been like lesbian visibility. You know, I didn't have like cool queer women around me, at least that I like knew about, but I guess that's the point, like they weren't out or, you know, in my kind of like periphery. There were a lot of like cool gay men in my life, and my parents had like gay male friends, and lots of teachers were out, but there weren't any like female teachers that were out that were like in my midst. So it took me a long time to like come out.
Until Mara very publicly opened a lesbian bar and got written up in the New York Times.
I mean, I understood that I would just have to kind of like face this head on, and I didn't really like field any questions. I just sort of sent it on to people in my family and just let them read about it and kind of come to conclusions on their own. Yeah, I wasn't taking questions.
Mara's bisexual, and at the time she had a boyfriend.
It was this interesting kind of position to be in my life of I'm opening a lesbian bar. But, I mean, this space is for people like that too, you know. It needs to be said that this is a space for all, you know, ranges of queer humans. So there's a lot of that, like, bi erasure that kind of has come into this. And it was really hard for me in the beginning because I felt like, even though this is mine, it felt like sometimes I didn't belong. So it was a little difficult. My partner at that time was like very supportive, but didn't spend a lot of time here. And that was hard, you know, because this was such a huge part of my existence. And so that became like a little bit difficult.
It's not uncommon for bisexual women, especially when in heterosexual relationships, to feel conflicted about their place in the lesbian community. Even those that own the very lesbian bar everyone is hanging out at.
I was kind of grappling with it because it didn't feel like it was my place to be, even though it was mine. I think it's partially just purely emotional. I think it's a lot of people's reactions to being a bi person, you know, people in even my midst and in my circle having shock at hearing I had a boyfriend, and not understanding that I'm a multifaceted person who has had an entire history before this and will continue to have, you know, live life after this.
Throughout this whole process, Mara has looked to Emily as somewhat of a role model.
Emily's somebody that I met who I instantly was really, she was just so kind of different to me and out and proud in this way that was like very compelling. And there's something about how she moved about in the world that was like really inspiring to me.
Aww.
You were my queero.
That's sweet.
I don't think Emily would mind me saying there's something innately dykey about her. The kind of warm dykiness I can totally see newer gays being drawn to. She has a short, shaggy haircut, bangs, often paired with chunky glasses and red lipstick. Emily also leads a very gay pop punk band.
My band is called Wild Yop, and I play guitar and I sing.
She's the lead singer, and she is a fucking queen.
I'm very vocally gay, because it is more comfortable for me to be loudly gay than to be trying to quietly fit in.
This meant a lot to Mara, especially as someone struggling with their identity in a straight passing relationship.
I remember, like, you telling me that you were a lesbian, and
I'm already crying, by the way.
I remember that you were telling me that you were a lesbian, and MC came to pick you up, and I saw MC in the parking lot, and MC, what I saw was not a woman, and I, like, thought so much more of you, and I, like, loved you even more because you, like, made my fucking brain explode. And I was like, wait a second, this is so different than what I thought.
That's very sweet.
And I love that.
Yeah, for context, my partner, MC, who passed away very recently, so this is why all the tears, they were a trans mask person, and they very much sort of, they passed for a cis dude. They kind of looked like a, I don't know, like a, they looked like they just like crawled out of a truck. And like
a handsome ginger cowboy.
Yeah. Like a, they were a big person, with like a big personality, and they just sort of, they very much, yeah, passed for a dude. And so I think it blew a lot of people's minds.
MC had been a big part of life at the Ruby Fruit.
MC passed away in August. And I will say they're my queero. They were loud and unfiltered and the biggest dyke I've ever met in my entire life. They made a lot of playlists for the Ruby Fruit.
They worked at Azette. They were with us the whole way. They helped us open the restaurant. They did a lot.
Emily met MC in 2020 when she first moved to LA.
I was supposed to go back to New York, but I fell in love with them and instead I stayed in LA.
There were a lot of things that brought her out here initially, not just the exhausting grind of New York.
Yeah, I was breaking up with my partner of 12 years. We had been together for a really long time, and our relationship was like, we needed to end it. We couldn't figure out how. And I think part of my just like, okay, I'm going to do a like quote unquote month in LA was my way of just like tearing off the Band-Aid, like just getting out and giving us both some space.
So Emily packed up her car and her dog and set out on a road trip from East Coast to West.
In retrospect, I took a lot of stuff with me from my apartment, like bedding and kitchen stuff and like art for the walls. And I think I knew I was moving here, but I didn't quite have the guts to say that out loud. I had lived in New York for like 15 years.
And then her first night going out in LA, Emily met MC.
My friend Francis, they do grandma drag, and they were having a show here in LA, and I had just gotten here. I drove across country and landed in LA the night before, went to Francis's show, and MC was sitting there.
This was February of 2020.
I remember the date. I landed on February 3rd. I met MC on February 4th. A month later, the pandemic hit, and I just didn't go back to New York. And MC wasn't the only reason I stayed here.
Like Denise, Emily had found what she was looking for in LA.
I loved it the moment I got here. I remember calling a friend in New York and being like, I'm actually not an angry person. It's very strange. I was like, I'm actually quite happy. And New York like made me really angry and irritable
coming here, I just, like, my shoulders dropped, the sun was on my face, everything felt possible. When I moved to LA, I was 36, and I used to joke that I retired. I was like, I retired at 36. I was like, oh, I have one job, and it's really easy to get to. I just get in my car, and I go there, and then I go home, and I don't know. I felt like everything was possible in this way, and I was totally hooked. And then the pandemic just really, like, drilled it in. I was not going back. Plus, I was falling in love.
Emily says they were falling in love, but her and MC didn't get together right away.
I mean, I was still breaking up with my ex, and we were exploring polyamory. But because it was the pandemic, MC and I mostly fell in love, like, over the phone. They were not in my, like, pod, quote unquote. And so we talked every single day.
Emily was, however, podding with her ex, who had come out to LA for an extremely drawn out, quarantined end of their relationship.
Essentially, like, in retrospect, we were sort of slowly breaking up. And again, we didn't really realize it at the time. Very lesbian. We were literally, like, reading The Ethical Slut and talking about being open in couples therapy and, like, doing the exercises in the book. And she had a crush on this other person, and I had a crush on MC. And every day we would have crush o'clock when we would call our crushes separately and, like, go have, like, 2-hour long conversations with our crushes. I feel like crush o'clock was, like, around 2-ish. Yeah.
By the time Emily hit the ground running with the Ruby Fruit a couple years later, her and MC were very much together. And as mentioned, MC was very much involved.
They were very pivotal in a lot of my conviction that this was a good idea. I think they were very much a huge supporter of this idea. They helped us craft the language when we were talking about, you know, because I would bounce ideas off of them. As a cis woman who identifies as a lesbian, I have many trans people in my life who I love dearly, but I am not a trans person, and I don't think I can personally speak to that experience. And so I would bounce ideas off of MC a lot, like, how does this sound to you? As truly the biggest dyke I've ever met in my entire life, who walks around looking like a cis dude, what would make you feel included in this space, because you belong here? And they helped us craft the language sapphically inclined. They helped me see that we could say lesbian, we could say dyke, and it didn't have to be exclusive. And I will always be grateful for that. They were like, I remember them saying to us, like, please, whatever you do, don't use, like, HR speak, you know, don't say, like, LGBTQIA+, you know, they were like, say, like, dykes, say zaddies, say gender freaks, say sapphically inclined, say, you know, like, they really helped us understand that we could be inclusive with our language, but still have a good time with it. It didn't have to be, like they said, HR speak.
Today, the Ruby Fruit's tagline is a strip mall wine bar for the sapphically inclined. And this language has ushered countless fruit flies through the door.
That's, like, the term that we use lovingly for our, like, regulars. We have a couple of different crews of regulars who all kind of come in together that we know. There's, like, 4 or 5 different groups, and they're kind of iconic for us. Like, everyone on our staff knows them. We know them by name. We know where they like to sit, what days of the week they come in.
I'm sure it's been life-changing for a lot of people in the area to finally have a dedicated lesbian space in LA. But no one's been more moved than Emily and Mara themselves.
Meeting Mara and having this all happen, it just feels like this is exactly where I was supposed to be.
Like, I needed Emily on my queer journey. For sure. For sure. And not just us, like, the other people around us, you know, our staff and our team, and, like, other people have come out since this opened and like, mm-hmm. this is crazy. Mm-hmm. It's really wild. It's moving and it brings us to tears all the time.
All the time.
All the time. All the time.
Yeah. 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 It's the gay agenda.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. We are recruiting actively.
Cruising is independently reported and produced by a small but mighty team of three. Story producer and social media manager Rachel Karp, line producer and resident road trip driver Jen McGinnity, and story producer and audio engineer me, Sarah Gabrielli. Our theme song is by Joey Freeman. This episode was sponsored by Olivia Travel. You can find us at our website, cruisingpod.com, on social media at cruisingpod, and at patreon.com/cruisingpod. Listen to Cruising wherever you get your podcasts.